The Grammy Award-winning contemporary music ensembles 8th Blackbird and 3rd Coast Percussion are performing the music of American composer Steve Reich as part of our Steve Reich Festival, and that is coming up tonight here at Interlochen Center for the Arts. And I'm here with Matthew Duvall, percussionist for 8th Blackbird. Hiya, Matthew.
Hello, Kate. Hello, everybody. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome. I'm okay, so far the coffee is the best part, I have to tell you. This is a quality establishment. Time is short.
It is, and we have to talk about Steve Reich for people who don't know about him
yet. I'm caffeinated and time is short. We have a lot to cover.
We do. Okay, what is it about him that makes us want to have a whole festival for his work? For somebody who's just
coming down. There's too many things, and we don't have enough time, and I am very stressed out. There's too much to do. So this is the thing.
Okay.
You have to pick and choose.
All right.
There's too much to discuss. So I chose one thing to distill. Sort of two things, but mostly one thing that we're going to focus on. And the key phrase for the moment is rhythmic perception. Maybe the Brock is the engineer today. Hi, Brock. And maybe he can insert like little Twilight Zone squiggly noises. Rhythmic perception. Something like that, okay. So here's the thing. Reich loves the number 12. He loves to write music that can be heard in different ways. And 12 is really fun that way, because if you have a bar with 12 notes in it, no, because it gets too complicated too quickly. If you have 12 cookies,
okay,
and you have friends, and the cookies, by the way, are chocolate chip because they're my favorite, you have friends, and you have to divide up the cookies. So you can have your 12 cookies, and you can divide them up 3 and 3 and 3 and 3, or you can divide them up 4 and 4 and 4, or if you only have one friend, which is both sad and happy, then each of you gets 6, which is the most cookies. So that could actually work out quite well.
Okay.
Or you can divide them up 6, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 6 people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can divide up the notes, the cookies, in different ways and see them in different ways and hear them in different ways. So we're going to do a couple examples of what Reich has done with the way he manipulates, the way he groups his cookies together so that they sound in fantastically different ways. It's quite magical. So if you have a little taste of what this means, you will hear, you pick things out in the concert that will just be sort of mind-bending.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for preparing us to be in this space. It sounds like you have to be in a space for this.
Yes. Do you? Okay, so Reich is a minimalist composer.
Yeah.
And as soon as I say that, I'm going to backpedal from it because I'm not a big fan of that term. Because minimalist, it is true that he uses highly distilled pieces of material as his building blocks. So, for example, drumming, the entire piece is built on one rhythm. Dig-a-dun, 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 the whole thing. But he twists it, he turns it upside down. People play it starting at different times, and then all the different patterns overlap in different ways across different chords and harmonies. So it's just extraordinary, the kind of expansion that takes place. But people tend to get lost in the minutiae of all of this rhythmic underpinning, this percolating, bubbling stuff. And you miss the big picture, because they say minimalist music, but what's really happening, it's really a maximalist gesture, because the point is not necessarily what happens in all of that little stuff. That becomes sort of a canvas,
mm-hmm,
over which huge, long gestures happen. And that is the real journey, is these big, arching phrases. One of the wonderful things about these pieces, in particular, Drumming and Music for 18, is that Reich left all of the different sections open, meaning he tells you what to do and how to do it, but he doesn't tell you how long to do it for or when to transition on to the next material. So that choice is left to the performers, and they sort of feel their way through it as they go through the concert. And what that injects every performance of these pieces with a kind of visceral buoyancy. It's so full of the spontaneity and joy and life of those players in that moment. And it's never replicated in exactly the same way. I love that surprise and unpredictability. but it always, but the architecture of it is very clear. There, it's a constant flow, and yeah, and you just sink into it, and you just, man, you just ride it until the end. It's fantastic. I have some sounds to play, some excerpts of some material to highlight some of these ideas. So how about, okay, so I said there was going to be one thing, but really sort of two.
Yes.
Here's the other thing. What is this music and what did it come from and what has been the legacy of it, right? So, okay, so the other thing that I'm going to do, which is probably unexpected, I'm in here this morning to play beautiful music, beautiful, quiet music, which is really relevant because there were many different styles coming out of the early 1900s, complicated music stuff, whatever. John Cage came along, mm-hmm. and he and Steve Reich have so much in common, which I think comes as a surprise to many people who think of Cage maybe only as a philosopher or a conceptualist. I don't know. But here's the similarities. They were both always listening to everything without prejudice. They just were musical omnivores. Everything around the world, they could take in styles. They processed it. They took it in. Incredibly curious people. They both have wonderful senses of humor. The people think that so much of what they do is serious, but they mistake that sort of intensity of focus for seriousness when it's really sort of this deeply attentive curiosity. they had a joy in hearing things that were new and unexpected. So Cage came along in the early to mid 1900s, sort of getting started in his career. And was questioning everything about the way Western European traditions were being composed and taught and performed. And they're both relentlessly stubborn about doing their own thing, about following wherever their ears need to take them. So Cage started out writing incredibly careful, delicate, so much beautiful music, some very rambunctious things too. And that was sort of comes from his sense of humor and his joy of life, but he wrote incredibly beautiful things too. And I feel in a lot of ways that this example that Cage set informed people who came later that it was okay to say, well, just because you did that thing and you think that that is what sophisticated and proper artists and composers do, that doesn't mean I also have to do it.
Yeah.
So Cage wrote a little piano piece. I'm going to play a little excerpt called In a Landscape. This is just a taste of it. We don't have time to play the whole thing, but please listen to it. And maybe a radio station you know of will play the whole thing on the air someday. I don't know. Could happen. We'll see. But here's an excerpt of In a Landscape by John Cage, just to warm things up a little bit. Thank you. Isn't that pretty?
Yeah.
It's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's not crazy, angular, dissonant, challenge. You know, it's not all of those things that we sometimes think of as modern composition.
Correct.
But that was John Cage. He wrote that.
Honestly, I would not have known that.
So stunning.
Oh, wow.
It was a huge part of his personality. Extraordinary, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love being surprised by things like that. And I hope if you're listening, you're surprised if you're thinking John Cage is crunchy or 4 minutes and 13 seconds or only experimental stuff. Sometimes experiments can be beautiful.
He was all of these things. And it was because he was not a proselytizer. He wasn't telling people what to think. He was Socratic. People would say, what should I do? And he would say, what do you hear? He would answer a question with a question because he was always listening himself. He questioned everything. And it was a childlike curiosity that he had for his entire life. So, okay, now back to Reich and rhythmic perception.
Yes.
Okay, so Reich worked in phases, and he likes to take a patterns, and he has people taking the exact same thing, and then he'll move one of the rhythms over a few notes. People are still playing the same thing, but now they're playing them at different times. And every time he moves it around a note one way or another, so you take your cookies,
right,
and you got 12 and 12, and then you move them so they're no longer in nice straight rows. Now the rows are offset, and they look different, you know, and there's different combinations of cookies now. And that's all he does with his 12 notes in the bar that he so often works with. And sometimes he moves the cookies slowly. So this is called phasing, and it's an extraordinary thing. And what happens is two players are playing the exact same pattern, and then one of them will change their tempo. Usually they'll speed up a little bit. So often musicians spend their lives trying to play together, right? But in this particular repertoire, this is Reich. It's very distinctive to his work. The players intentionally play slightly different tempos. It's actually very, very challenging. It's a very unique skill set. And because one of them speeds up, they start to pull apart. And then for a moment, they're like the windshield wipers that don't go at the same rate. So they start out together, and then pretty soon one is going the other way, and one's going, and then they slowly come back together. So that's what happens in phasing, is that one speeds up faster than the other, and slowly moves ahead until they've moved a note ahead of the first person. And then what they come back together on the same beat, the same pulse. Okay. But they're playing the patterns now starting at different times. And that creates a new, if that's pitched instruments, you get a new melody. Mm-hmm. And rhythmically, you get new rhythms just by moving things around. And if you do this gradually, if you transition by this speeding up thing, it sounds like it's all wrong for a few moments, but you're going through this really tense, what's going to happen? They're not together. And then they magically realign. And it's such a satisfying arrival. So Reich has his periods and the whole phasing thing we just talked about. And then after that, he stopped phasing. He felt like, oh, I've done many experiments. I've written a huge piece. I need to move on from this and do a different thing. So instead of phasing, which is gradual transitions, he just started shifting. So now instead of the gradual sort of chaotic motion, although you have to do it in a really controlled way, so that's very contradictory. But anyway, this thing where everybody sounds off and then snaps back together. In shifting, you just move from one part of the bar, one part of the pattern to another part of the pattern. You just shift abruptly. And so you're playing one thing and you're sort of locked in and you're grooving, and then pow, it shifts to a different thing. So Music for 18, he built up to that through a series of prior smaller pieces. And one of the first ones was called Clapping Music. And it was just for him. He needed two sounds. He wanted two same sounds, and we're not going to do that today, but he wanted two similar sounds. So he just chose people clapping. There's very little setup. It's very convenient. And they play patterns, and the patterns shift in a systematic way. And once you've gone through all the permutations, then they arrive back together, and that's the piece. And so you get to hear all the different combinations. So I've created a very short version. So we're going to hear this. So we've got 12 notes, and we're going to hear it, for this example, we're going to hear it as a bar of three. So the pattern is, I should just play it for you. I have instruments here. So here's the first bar. One, two, three. One, two, three. But when the patterns shift, let's move the metal, the cowbell, we'll move that to a new beat. So instead of coming on beat one, it's going to move to beat three. And when that happens, you'll hear the patterns happening at different times. But keep in mind that my hands are still both playing the same pattern. They're not playing the patterns together anymore.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll play the first bar a couple of times, and then it'll move to beat three. Okay, here we go. So I put a little accent on the groupings of three. If you listen for the threes, the three notes together, that'll tell you where the pattern is starting in on that instrument.
Okay.
So now they're offset.
Right.
And when that happens, it created a new rhythm and a new little melody between those two pitches.
Yep.
Okay. So I'll play that. I'll play my first one, and then I'm going to move it to beat three.
Okay.
And then I'm going to move it to beat two, and then back to beat one. So you'll hear the cowbell and the left hand cycle to the different beats in the measure. But the wood block, the tempo block, will always stay the same.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Neat.
Right. So the reason he had two clappers doing it is because one of the things that is can be really magical about it is that if the two instruments sound very similar, mm-hmm. it's a little bit harder to figure out where the patterns are shifting, but you can still hear it if you know what to listen for, like those three notes that we talked about.
Yeah.
But when the instruments sound really similar, then the prominence of one voice being the downbeat for it. So when I did this example, I used wood for that. That disappears, and your ear can play tricks on you, which is fun, and the downbeat will move to different parts of the bar. So everybody who hears the piece can hear a different version of it, depending on your choice of rhythmic perception. See, the perceptions can shift.
Oh.
That is one of the really magical things about what's going to happen in these concerts and this whole lifelong body of work that Reich has created, as all of these experiments with different ways to hear things.
So it matters as much what the listener brings to it.
Totally, totally, totally. Oh. And that's one of the wonderful things about it. There, as a listener, that brings with it an incredible freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to get it in a certain way. How you hear the concert, how you choose to enjoy it, is completely up to you. It's delightful. So Reich moves patterns around in these pieces. Great. So that's one example. And then, okay, so here's sort of influences and other people doing similar things. There's another short excerpt by a composer named Eric Griswold. He was born in California, but he lives in Australia now. And he wrote a little piece called Switch. And this is another way to hear how rhythms shift. And this also happens, especially in Music for 18, which will be Friday night. So remember how we have all the cookies and you can divide them up for your friends in different ways?
Yes.
Okay. So something that happens throughout Music for 18 is you can hear it in that you can hear the pulse in most often you hear it in three groups of four. Okay. But other times he shifts it, and instead of hearing he goes exact same notes, exact same rhythm, exact same tempo, but they're emphasized differently, so they sound like different groups, which they are. It's groups of four versus groups of three. So Eric Griswold wrote a short piece that plays with this switching your perception of what you're hearing between threes or fours. And just keep in mind, when I play this little excerpt for you and you hear the the rhythm switching between the blocks. I'm going to use the tempo blocks I got in South Korea, but now I'm going to use a little set of three of them. Keep in mind that I'm never changing the number of beats in the bar, and I'm never changing the tempo. My hands are always, my right hand is going to play groups of four, and my left hand is going to play groups of three. So if you want to count that out, the left hand is playing on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And the right hand is playing on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Right? So two different, yeah, same notes. It's all 12 notes.
Okay,
here we go. So here's a little bit of switch, and you'll hear the emphasis shifting between the hands.
Okay. You explain this, I'm looking at you wide-eyed, though, because that just seems kind of bananas to me to be able to do.
Okay, so here's the thing. You know how the thing where you rub your...
Oh, pat your head.
Which one is it? Pat and something?
Pat your head and rub your stomach.
Pat your head and rub your tummy?
Yeah.
Is that what you do?
Yeah.
Except you have like 12 heads and 12 tummies.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. So there's just a little fun piece of it, just some ideas.
Very cool. New things popping up in all of the spaces where there were no spaces.
Right.
Okay.
Just keep shifting and you hear things in different ways. It's almost like going in and out of focus mm-hmm. or close and far. There's many different ways to imagine it. And again, that's up to you, the listener. You get to decide what your imagination wants to do.
That's great.
Yeah. So there's a couple of examples of different ways of manipulating the patterns and the rhythms in these bars. And this is the playground that that Reich revels in. So there's more. Okay.
But wait,
there's more. So now we're going to add some pitches with another piece by another composer. Okay, and here's another facet of all of this. In music, one of the most fundamental reasons why music works, big statement here, is because composers build up tension and then they release it. Tension and then release. This is one of the ways that music is affecting. We often think of that happening harmonically. You play a beautiful chord, then the chords get a little more complicated, and then it sort of builds up, and then you have a cadence. You have a moment of release, and we go, oh, this is a big moment in the piece, and then it goes, jom, jom, and it's the big ending, and that's the release. And that's because of the way the harmonies work. So that's a winner. That's been a go-to successful musical thing to do in the world of music forever and ever. Okay, so, but this tension and release can also be incredibly amplified or accomplished also in a different way by using rhythms. So here's a student of Reich's. So this is someone who is absolutely a part of the legacy of Steve Reich's influence compositionally in the arts world. His name is David Lang. He's another favorite composer of mine and a dear, dear friend. And he wrote a beautiful little piece for piano called Wed. And this is one of the most, I think, one of probably the pieces of music that is most special to me. You know, sometimes just things just speak to you. Mm-hmm. And this is such a deceptively simple thing, but it's so carefully crafted by David. And there's a story. I need to tell you the story because it's also, I think it's just very meaningful. And it's such a part of this composition. So, but what about the story in a second? But what to listen for is what David does essentially is there's sort of four voices, and they, for the most part, are low, medium, higher, and highest. And they play at different rates. So they're different rhythms, but you'll hear one going, dong, gong, gong. And again, so you'll hear another one going, gong, 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 gong. And so it's the same thing of where he might have... There's a way to count this piece. It's not how we notated it, but don't worry about that. There's a way to count it so that it's also in groupings of 12. And so you have a lot of the same idea of some groupings of 3 and other groupings in 4, and they sort of they go together, and they create tension and then release. So there's a lot of that tension and release throughout this piece. So Wed, David was good friends with... visual artist named Kate Erickson. She was a public installation artist. She did a variety of interesting things, but she's very young. She had been in a long, meaningful relationship, but she got very, very sick. She was in her late 30s with a terminal illness, and they were in the hospital, and she and her partner decided to get married before she passed away. And David was there visiting and was the witness for this little ceremony they had in the hospital room. And she passed away shortly after. And David's wrote Wed in memory of Kate Erickson. Thank you. So that was Wed by David Lang.
Wow. A lot of coming together and coming apart.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. You can hear all the voices in his head and conflicting emotions. Uh-huh. That's what I think about.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so emotive. Breaks my heart every time I play it. Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's something to think about in terms of minimalism, that so much happening with just a few small ingredients.
Yes. Sure. Yes, that definition I like. It's building up long stretches of increasing amounts of tension, and then finally the composer lets it go, and then maybe rebuilds or take it a different direction. But it's large, sweeping, intense gestures.
And I'm hoping if you're listening to this right now, that this is giving you a way to expand your ears when you're hearing this kind of music. Maybe it gives you a new genre to come into. I mean, obviously we have this concert, but this encompasses so much that is leading up to this concert.
Yes, that's why I was so excited to play some things by different composers, mm-hmm. and not just play Reich's music, because the context is so much bigger than that. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Matthew Duvall.
You're welcome. You're welcome. What? I love coming here anytime.
Oh, what an education this has been. And of course, we're going to take all of these lessons we've learned today, these deep lessons and the fun lessons and all of it, smack it together tonight on stage in Carson Auditorium at 7:30.
We are. So, Kate, I brought some outro music.
Neat.
Yeah. So in some of the same spirit of the things we've been talking about, and again, with our shared love of beautiful music, there's another composer named Peter Garland. He's probably less well known than somebody like Steve Reich, but he writes extraordinarily personal music. He is friends with all of these minimalist composers and, you know, other styles and aesthetics. And I don't like to paint people into corners, but he wrote a beautiful little piano piece called "The Days Run Away." And one of the things that's really nice about this is similar to what Reich does in drumming and music for 18, is that the piece, the musical material is open. So the performer chooses how long to play an iteration of something, and it's just a little fragment, and it gently expands, and then it collapses again upon itself, and that's the piece. And if you would give me just a couple more minutes,
please,
I would love to play, and then you just have to promise me that that when we fade out and move on to whatever is next on lovely IPR, that you interrupt with a whisper, nothing too jarring.
I promise.
I would love it if all of us, if your listeners, hello everybody, if we would all just stop what we're doing for a moment and look out the window, and here are 2 or 3 minutes that are just for you. Take a deep breath, and then afterward we'll all move on with our day together. Thank you.
Matthew Duvall, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.